From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Next week, New York City will play host to a gathering of heads of state from around the world. It's the UN General Assembly. And on Wednesday, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, who will be hosting next week his last such gathering, gave a press conference at UN headquarters.
This year's high-level week at the United Nations comes at a critical time. We will seek progress in resolving protracted conflicts and rising tensions in Africa, Asia, Europe, and the Middle East. We'll strive to continue the momentum towards the implementing 17 Sustainable Development Goals, and that is which is our plan of action for peace and prosperity on a healthier planet. We will highlight emerging issues as well as situations that demand more attention.
One such issue might be the continuing Israeli assault against Gaza in the face of another Israeli bombing raid against that beleaguered city. However, that does not appear to be on the radar of the international community, and it's certainly not on the radar in Washington. Instead, the Obama administration appears to have rewarded Israel for its conduct against Gaza. We begin with this report from Press TV's Kanish Fatima.
Israeli warplanes have carried out airstrikes against the besieged Gaza Strip. The Israeli military has said in a statement that its aircraft targeted three positions run by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. It said the attacks were in response to a rocket fired from Gaza into southern Israel late Wednesday. Israel has carried out similar attacks on Gaza over the past months, leaving four Palestinians wounded.
Meanwhile, the U.S. has signed a new military aid pact with Israel that is a record. Washington will give Tel Aviv $38 billion in military aid over a 10-year period. It's the biggest pledge of U.S. military assistance ever made to any foreign government. The package for the first time will include money for Israel's missile systems. It calls for at least $3.8 billion a year in aid, up from $3.1 billion under the current agreement, which expires in 2018. Israel has been the largest recipient of U.S. foreign aid since World War II, over $124 billion since the aid began in 1962. And now we go to our weekly segment with BlackAgendaReport.com columnist Margaret Kimberly. This week's Freedom Rider column, Saving Syria. Margaret, a pleasure to speak with you as always.
Hi, Don. Good morning.
Good morning. So, standing with Syria, let's talk about that.
Yeah, I found it interesting that, well, first of all, it's pretty clear that people who call themselves anti-war, or they may call themselves leftists, generally are not. Most of them are Democrats, and they can be easily swayed into, in effect, giving de facto support to American aggression. And my column this week was called Standing with Syria, which is where I believe anti-war people ought to be, standing with Syria. But that is controversial because there are people who are terrified of being considered pro-Assad, and they hedge their statements, or they the propaganda now is all about, and it's true, people are suffering after 5 years of war. Their homes have been destroyed. There are 9 million displaced people. There are these horrible sieges. People are starving, have been deprived of medical care. And so this has, and I'm not saying it should not be a focus of attention. It should not be something that people care about. But it's caused confusion about where people who are really anti-war, who are really left, ought to be. And they ought to be standing with Syria, with the government, and not being afraid of being called pro-Assad. The fault in this whole war lies with the United States. And that should be where people begin, condemning the aggression of the United States and NATO. In 2011, flush with the success of destroying Libya, the next notch on their gun was Syria. There has been a campaign, an ongoing campaign, to get rid of secular governments in the Middle East and to replace them, to support, first of all, the monarchies like Saudi Arabia and Qatar and other countries, and talk about undemocratic, and to get rid of Saddam Hussein, to get rid of Gaddafi, and then next to get rid of Assad. So this so-called civil war is nothing of the sort. The United States has a policy going back decades, going back starting with Carter, of promoting jihadist groups and using them as America's de facto soldiers. So the democratic opposition, the moderates, the Free Syrian Army, whatever you want to call them, ISIS, in fact, al-Nusra Front, the al-Qaeda branch in Syria, the United States has been giving them arms, giving them money to topple the Assad government. So if people are concerned about the human rights of the Syrian people, they have to first start with condemning the United States, because the United States is, in fact, responsible for most of the human rights abuses. And the ultimate human rights abuse, of course, is death and war. So I find it interesting, though, that people buy into the pro-state propaganda of the Obama administration and the corporate media, who work hand-in-hand with him, with any president, and just parrot their talking points and forget the larger picture, which is that American aggression is the cause of all of Syria's problems.
You know, you go back to Afghanistan in terms of using proxies, but, you know, the ahistorical burden of ahistoricalness on the left, it's staggering. We're looking at, for example, what's happened when the war against Libya and Syria were being hatched by the Obama administration and kicking off in the early part of 2011. It was coordinate with what was then being called, and still called by some, the so-called Arab Spring. At the core of that, you had Egypt and Syria, and which is the latest one now. Egypt was the first, which had a secular government, which was replaced essentially by the United States, and then only because the army stepped in, it was on its way to being a non-secular government with the Muslim Brotherhood. You have Syria, and you have already Iraq, which was destroyed a decade prior. That's the old United Arab Republic, the fullest expression of pan-Arabism. The flag, they never reached all three states, but the flag had three stars, and they represented Egypt, Syria, those two were one nation state for a moment, and Iraq. Now you have, only because the military stepped in, a secular state in Egypt, but it's a military dictatorship, which is the only way they're able to maintain that status. You have Syria in ruins and Iraq in ruins. This is all a result of U.S. policy. And the policy goes back to the 50s, because look what they did with Nasser.
Yes, absolutely. And this is, use the word ahistorical, but I don't know how many people know what you just said. Even people who call themselves leftists. I think I start from the premise and that the United States is the cause of all these problems, and the facts back me up. And there are people who say, well, there are other bad actors, or, you know, Putin's not a nice guy, or I've said nothing about Putin. I just said the United States is to blame. It's America's insistence on running the world. And this is, Obama has carried out the Republican dream, the neocon dream of the United States running the Middle East. the project for a new American century. This is it. Our only friend, the only friend of the U.S. is Israel. The secular governments cannot be trusted and must be destroyed. The only friends are these monarchies. That is the neocon dream come true, as Democrats often do. They're the ones who make reality the things that Republicans dream about. And that is the cause of the humanitarian disasters that we're seeing now. Libya, with virtually no government at all, thanks to the United States.
Or five
now. I'm sorry?
Or five governments, whatever.
Yes, yes, it is, actually. That's true. Yeah. It's been broken up. Yeah. The consequence of that, of course, is one of them is that Libya is now an embarkation point for people trying to flee warfare or trying to flee poverty. Mm-hmm. So you have thousands of people who've been killed trying to make this dangerous crossing to Europe through Libya, which did not happen in the days of Gaddafi.
And which he predicted, by the way. He said exactly what's happened would happen.
Yes, he did. And but then, you know, the corporate media working so closely with American presidents. I mean, Gaddafi was a man. Reagan tried to kill him. He tried to and failed and then just decided to give up, unlike Obama and Clinton. Mm-hmm. Who decided to do it and did it, and then she laughed about having done it.
Right.
Gaddafi was, you know, up and down in the eyes of the press and the presidents, and then they decided to put a target on his head, and that was it for him. Mm. So, and then, of course, we always get the narrative of a brutal dictator, he kills his own people, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I'm not defending human rights abuses by others, but at this point in my political life, I have concluded the worst violator of human rights in the domestically and in the world is the United States. Right. If you look at our prison system, if you look at the fact that the police kill three people every single day, then you look at the violence that America carries out abroad, the United States has no right to point fingers at others and talk about their human rights problems. We have a very serious and abysmal human rights record right here. That doesn't mean individuals can't point out when people are suffering somewhere else, but it cannot be allowed to be the justification for American aggressions around the world. So the United States did not have a right to decide who runs Libya and to kill 50,000 people and destroy this country. Whatever Gaddafi may have done, he made enemies. He did kill some of his opponents. There was a terrible massacre, if you will, some years ago. That does not give the United States the right to run Libya, as if the United States really cares about human rights abuses. That's the other issue. Assad. I find it interesting. Most people didn't know much about Assad until 2011. I didn't know a lot about him, I will admit, but I don't know what his human rights record was, and I cannot use that as a justification. And whatever it was, I cannot use that as a justification for the United States and NATO and Syria, and I'm sorry, and Israel and Saudi Arabia and Turkey, and this rogues gallery to destroy that country and kill people. He has not killed 400,000 people. This war killed 400,000 people. 9 million people are displaced internally and internationally. Yep. Because the United States attacked Syria. The United States is to blame for everything that is happening to the Syrian people. All of the suffering can be laid at the feet of the United States. But, you know, they're very clever. First they talk about Assad is so terrible. Then they claim without evidence that he gassed his own people. That's their favorite in 2013, right, when Obama was trying to make the case for direct intervention. And the British Parliament voted no, and that took some of the wind out of his sails, and it didn't happen, thank goodness. Mm. But it is America's fault. And they use things like barrel bombs. They go on and on about Assad's barrel bombs. I had to look it up. I was like, what is a barrel bomb?
Yeah.
It's a homemade bomb.
Right.
That's it. It's a barrel filled with explosives or metal or any number of things.
Right.
It doesn't kill more people than any other kind of bomb.
Right. It's actually not as efficient as other bombs because it's kind of ragtag.
Exactly. I'm sure the bombs that America gives to the head choppers are probably more efficient at killing people than these barrel bombs allegedly used by Assad, which I don't even know if it's true.
Right.
I doubt everything they tell us about Syria. So, but people on the left are, because they don't know history, because their point of view is not focused on American aggression, can be very easily confused. So there are people who attack one another. If someone makes the case, as I have made, that the way to end the suffering is to stand with the Syrian government and to see it is the representative of the Syrian people who have reelected Assad since this war began. And if Assad was so hated, this would be a perfect opportunity to be rid of him.
Right.
For his army to get rid of him.
Right.
For people to rise up against him. Instead, people turned out in droves to vote for him.
That's right.
The last election they had. People who were refugees did their best to register to vote outside of the country.
Right.
And to declare their solidarity with their government and their desire to be free of this terror that's been inflicted upon them from the outside. But there are people on the left who are arguing with one another, who demonize people who do visit Syria, who demonize anybody who suggests that the Syrian government should be supported. And I wrote the column because I just wanted to make it clear. We have to stand with, no matter what people have, other leaders have done around the world, we must always be opposed to American interventions, always.
You know, when we talk about being ahistorical, if you did a year-by-year body count from, let's say, April of 1945, when Harry Truman became president, if I remember that correctly, you've got, you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the firebombing of Tokyo, the firebombing of Dresden and all the other cities in the European theater, and then every year. Since then, the U.S. involvement in Korea, you know, U.S. involvement in Vietnam, U.S. occupations of places like the Dominican Republic, and all of the games that they played, you know, we see CIA involvement in imposing the Shah on Iran, in the murder of Lumumba, and all of the liberation struggles that were taking place across Asia and Africa, the United States involved basically in murdering millions of people to suppress that. There is no other country on the planet that can even come close within an order of magnitude to what the United States has done. And yet there are people who consider themselves on the left and peace activists, no less, who don't get that the United States is the bad actor that has to be stopped, which is the one, by the way, that they are responsible for in the world, on the world stage.
Exactly. So if anybody, exactly. We are responsible for speaking out against our own government first. It just amazes me the extent to which people want to be thought of as being good. Americans use the word good all the time. It's one of the foundations that we are good. And so people constantly talk about how bad Assad was, or since Russia stepped in a year ago, which saved the Assad government and saved, frankly, did a favor for the world. Putin, and Putin has been thoroughly demonized. I'd like to talk about that next week. I'll give everybody a preview of the effects of Putin derangement syndrome.
Right.
And there are people who, before you say anything about Syria, say, well, Putin's not a nice guy. And I haven't said anything about Putin being a nice guy. World leaders generally are not nice. But he did the right thing in standing with Syria. He was, unlike the United States, was invited in. He's the one following international law. And came in at the invitation of the government, and is fighting against the terrorists that we spend so much time saying are horrible. So, but that is how easily people are fooled. And so it's very sad to me that there's a this tiny group of people, relatively, who really know how to talk about the issue of American intervention abroad. And that's why I felt moved to write about this.
And for example, in Syria, you had the U.S., I don't know, creating, but whatever, bringing to the national consciousness in a big way this group ISIS as being the ultimate evil, supplanting the old communist Red Scare, or whatever. This is the big ultimate evil following Al-Qaeda and following Saddam Hussein and following yada, yada, yada. You had actually playing out on the ground this group of maniacs that are chopping people's heads off on YouTube and such, marching across the desert in Iraq. And I don't know if people remember, but the reason that we didn't have to be afraid of getting entangled in Iraq back in 1991 was that, unlike Vietnam, it's not a jungle, it's a desert, and we can see everything, so we can bomb the hell out of them, etc. Well, a fleet of Toyotas travels across half of Iraq into Syria, and the United States, the U.S. Air Force, the NATO partners, quote-unquote, allow it. All they do is direct it so that it goes towards Damascus and towards cities that they want to see Assad, quote-unquote, or really the Syrian government, lose control of. Russia sees this, the government sees this, and says the U.S. is playing footsies with the with ISIS, or whatever this group really is, and will you come and help us? And so they start bombing ISIS, and the U.S. goes bananas.
Right.
But it finally changed the momentum of ISIS completely, and that was Russia's military doing, and in coordination with the Syrian government, and actually in opposition to the U.S. military activity there, which, by the way, included helping to guide a Turkish plane to shoot down a Russian plane.
Yes, that's true, and bring the world close to war. Although things have changed now, and Turkey is now friendly with Russia, but but absolutely, ISIS, the United States, Donald Trump said, you know, in his Trumpian off-the-cuff way, that Clinton and Obama created ISIS. Then he backtracked, but he was right the first time.
Right.
And he was unfortunately not able to articulate what, who knows what he actually meant, but he was telling the truth. The United States, ISIS thrives everywhere where the United States has intervened. Iraq, Syria, Libya, those are ISIS HQ. And as I said before, this is longstanding U.S. policy to use these jihadists to do America's dirty work, which generally doesn't work out. We just, the anniversary of 9/11 just passed, and nobody still talks about how that was blowback
right.
from American support of bin Laden,
right.
Starting in the 80s late 70s
right.
with Jimmy Carter.
Right.
So this is something that needs to be examined, but it goes completely unexamined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I periodically throw up at my Facebook page the video of Carter's national security advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, you know, sitting in a tank hanging out with the guys, what were then being labeled the Mujahideen, who were the old landlords, the tribal landlords in the countryside, practically slave owners, who were angry because the government, the native communist government of Afghanistan was doing land redistribution. And so the U.S. saw this as an opportunity, because Afghanistan bordered the Soviet Union, to stir up trouble along the borders and to give the Soviet Union its own Vietnam. That was the terminology Brzezinski wrote. And that's the group that became Al-Qaeda. They were armed, trained, organized. They were organized by the United States.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I think back to, that's almost 40 years ago now, believe it or not, to what we were told about Afghanistan, that the Soviets just invaded, not that the government of
right.
Afghanistan asked for their help.
Begged.
But that the Soviets just invaded Afghanistan, and we had to boycott the Olympics, and the Soviets were evil. And so actually what we're seeing now with Putin is a replay of what we've seen over the years. But the only thing worse than our government's lies is the extent to which the corporate media help them, assist them in spreading lies. Anything about the Russian media, it's like Russia's state-controlled media. You know, any country that the U.S. doesn't like, it's a state-controlled media. Well, right. You know, what do we have?
Right.
I'm sorry. I think you can call our media state-controlled, the New York Times and the networks and so on.
Right.
So, so yes, we've seen this movie. We know how it ends. It always ends with the human suffering, suffering of innocent people caused by our government. And so I just wanted to put in, you know, my two cents on the issue of Syria. But Syria, it's funny. People are so entrenched in their opinions. And but you know, the good thing is a crisis tells you where people stand. And you know who is for real and who is putting up a front, who's really anti-war, who just wants to be accepted. And a lot of people who call themselves left, who say they're anti-war, want to be accepted. A lot of them want to be flag wavers. They want to be considered patriotic. They want to be part of that narrative of the United States. And that is why they end up on what I would call the wrong side.
And finally, let me ask one thing. The... I actually was discussing this yesterday with someone, with a friend. I remember in February of 2003, half a million people that were freezing their behinds off, myself included, in the streets of New York protesting the Iraq. Remember how cold it was that day?
Yes, it was freezing, yes.
And I also remember that, I think it was April 8th of 2011 at Union Square, when the anti-war movement did a mobilization against the war that was developing against Libya. And there were maybe, I don't know, a few thousand people filling up Union Square as opposed to a half a million that were out in the street against the war in Iraq. This was the difference between the anti-war movement under Republican Bush and the anti-war movement under Democratic Obama.
Yes, that was masterful. Making the new leader of the empire a Democrat and a black man. That was just the perfect crime. The anti-war movement was largely an anti-Bush movement. And we saw that when some of the same people said little or nothing when Obama destroyed Libya. Obama was very smart. As he said when he campaigned, he says, "I'm not against all wars, I'm just against dumb wars." That meant he knew that it was there would be more opposition if American troops were sent anywhere. So he just didn't send American troops as he went around destroying the country after country. So that's one of the things that cuts down on American opposition to war. If no Americans are getting killed.
Right.
So he was very clever in making sure that did not happen. So he helped the jihadists, the people who ended up, this is the real scandal of Benghazi, the people who killed the U.S. ambassador, were the same people that the United States was supporting. So there was this man who managed to market himself as a peace candidate, and that still lingers. That Obama, Bush bad, Obama good. So he can get away with a lot more, and have less opposition.
Margaret Kimberly is a columnist with BlackAgendaReport.com. Her weekly column, Freedom Rider, this week is called...
Standing with Syria.
Thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.